This is Clearly Classical on Valley Public Radio. I'm Joe Moore. Sarah Chang is one of the world's premier violinists. Since her debut with the New York Philharmonic at the age of 8, she's performed with the greatest orchestras and conductors in the world. She's no stranger to Fresno audiences, of course, with several prior appearances ranking among the most memorable in the recent history of the Fresno Philharmonic's guest artist series. She returns to Central California this weekend for a concert celebrating the orchestra's 60th anniversary on Saturday and Sunday. And she joins us now here in our studio, as well as the maestro of the orchestra, Theodore Kuchar. Sarah, welcome.
Thank you. And Happy to be here.
And Ted, welcome as well.
Thank you very much, Joe.
This is a very special treat. Sarah, we usually get to talk to artists on the phone in advance of the concert, and it's very special to have you here in our studio. So I want to ask about some things that you mentioned in our first interview and sort of follow up with those. And Ted, also some questions for you. Sarah, when we were talking earlier, you mentioned about performing the Brook Violin Concerto, which you'll be playing this weekend in Fresno, and your history with this piece, going back to your Juilliard audition. You mentioned at that time that Juilliard was your dream school. Tell me about that. Was that something that you had ambitions of at that young age? What did you think of Juilliard when you were 5? Did you realize the enormity of that accomplishment?
No, I think when you're 5, you know,
yeah.
First of all, your attention span is astronomical. And I wanted to go to Juilliard because my dad went there. You know, my dad went to Juilliard, and, you know, at that age, you're daddy's little girl and you want to do everything that your dad did. So, you know, I asked for the violin when I was 4 because that was dad's instrument. And then when I was 5, you know, I wanted to go to the school that he went to. And they decided, my parents decided that even though we were in Philadelphia and Curtis was literally just across the street, you know, they decided that we'd try for Juilliard and, you know, we would try for my dad's teacher, who was Dorothy DeLay at the time. And I auditioned, and The Brook was my audition piece for the Juilliard School, which is why I have such a sweet spot in my heart for it, because it literally was the piece that got me into the school of my dreams. So, so that's why I've sort of like carried this really special place in my heart.
If you had to describe that piece of music to someone and just encapsulate it in a few words or a few lines, what, beyond your personal experience, talking about the music itself, what comes to mind?
One of the most beautiful concertos ever written. Beautiful and glorious, and it's almost like unapologetically romantic. You know, it's German, and there's a certain, you know, thing with, you know, maestro probably it does to this, that, you know, there's a certain Germanic sort of attitude that you have to have when you play all these great, you know, Bach and Mozart and Beethoven and all these great German composers. But Brook, I think you have a little bit more of a license to be a little bit freer than the other guys. And, you know, he was also very surprisingly romantic composer. If you, you know, listen to some of the very lyrical melodies and the almost chamber music-like quality that, you know, that his concerto has, it's a lot of fun to play. And, you know, I think it's one of the most popular pieces in their repertoire for a reason.
Joe, can I add a bit of trivia about this piece, which absolutely shocked me when I found out? I was in London 4 or 5 years ago, and I was being driven. I was in the back of a car, and it happened to be the week that the BBC was having its Listener's Choice Awards. On Monday, they were going to announce the favorite opera of the BBC listeners. The Tuesday was the favorite symphony. And I happened to be in the car on the Wednesday, which is the day of the first rehearsal. I was being driven to a rehearsal, and there was coming the announcement of the Listener's Choice Award for the favorite concerto. Now, I would have put my money, being a betting man, on Rachmaninoff number 2, Tchaikovsky number 1. But even if it was limited to the violin, I'm not sure that I would have told you what I'm about to. I probably would have said Mendelssohn or Tchaikovsky. The number one voted upon concerto was the Bruch Violin Concerto in G minor. Yeah. Over Tchaikovsky, over Rachmaninoff, over Mendelssohn. Yeah. I was absolutely shocked. And that's probably the one thing that will always remain to me. But just to go on, Max Bruch was a fascinating creature, because although this concerto represents the greatest of romantic tradition from, I would say, even the first half of the 19th century, Bruch was certainly a composer out of his element at all times in his life. Just 2 weeks ago, colleagues and I had played the last work he composed, which is his string octet, you know, for 4 violins, 2 violas, and 2 cellos, which was composed in 1920. Now, that's called a 20th century composer and a 20th century work. He didn't change a darn bit from the time he composed the violin concerto nearly 55 years earlier. And Bruch remained a romantic, whether it's in the first violin concerto, the second concerto, the Scottish fantasy, his chamber music. He was not ashamed to remain faithful to his identity and to that which meant the most to him. And my goodness, but if ever there was an undervalued melodicist or genius composer, it was certainly Max Bruch. But there's no question that this concerto is really one of the great foundations of the violinist's repertoire. And as I told you, at least in London, it has a pretty, pretty darn good following.
Yes, indeed. And we certainly look forward to the performances this weekend, celebrating the Fresno Philharmonic's 60th anniversary with one of its favorite guest artists returning to Central California, Sarah Chang, who joins us in our studio now, as well as Maestro Theodore Kuchar. You two have known each other for some time, and I want to ask about the recent tour that you had in South Africa in a moment. But before we do that, if I could ask each of you to tell me a little about the other, and maybe I'll start with you.
This is such a bad idea.
Ladies first.
No. Oh, not happening.
Maestro Kuchar, you are beaming in this interview for our listeners who aren't here. but it has to be a great thrill to have an artist such as Sarah joining you in the orchestra, but it also has to be an equal thrill to see Sarah's career evolve and her artistry evolve as well over the many years that you have known her and worked with her. Tell me a little about what makes Sarah special.
Oh, God, I should leave
your
the room for
your
this.
Listeners cannot see what I see. Our first collaboration, I believe, was in 1999. And I think that was with the Brahms Concerto. And I think it was one of your earlier encounters with the piece. And, I'm sorry to say, but already at that point in time, Sarah was a legend. I mean, she's a legend of our profession. There are very few people at her age, which I'm not going to explain, but everything with the internet can be found very, very quickly. But there are very few. There's nobody of her age who is such a war-torn veteran of the profession and has been such a legend for so long. I mean, this kid from the first recording at the age of 10 has gone from being a child prodigy in the eyes of the entire musical world to having made that great adaptation, from being a very talented, followed, prolific child to a very seasoned, mature veteran of the trade. And very, very few people can make that transition. There are those who are very successful at an early age and evaporate into the clouds when they reach adulthood. And then there are those who, in their childhood, through their adolescence, develop much later than others do and only find their true meaning in life much, much later. And Sarah is a unique creature because really from the very, very earliest moments up to where we are right now, which has represented a rather significant amount of time, she's remained a fluke, a freak of nature, and an icon at what she does. And I can say that from 1999 to where we are now in 2014, many of the things I remember about that first experience, and we've been through the Brahms Concerto, we've been through Alban Berg, we've been through Shostakovich I, Tchaikovsky.
We did Sibelius.
We did Sibelius in June in South Africa. And I know there's one more, but that's irrelevant at this point. The fact is, many people who achieve this fame, this popularity, are often happy to rest on their laurels. They keep their repertoire very small. But Sarah, for all intents and purposes and what we've discussed, is still, I think, a kid at heart. She is still learning new repertoire all the time. She's developing. I see great changes in her at all times. And it's simply a great pleasure and a great honor. And when the violin goes in the case, whether it's riding in the car to the concert or as we had a lot of time in June, she's really a very caring colleague. And when American Express will not advance me the money, Maestro, come here. let me forward you the cash. And then when I want to give it back the next day, she won't take it. But She took very good care of me.
Oh, that is hilarious. Oh, my goodness.
Oh. Sarah, it's pretty obvious you two have a pretty good rapport. Is that common in the relationship between the soloist and the conductor? Tell me a little about that and how. What is your relationship with Ted like in that way?
You know what? I trust Maestro. That's really it. You know, I trust him on stage and
handshake in the studio right now.
I trust him. You know, when you're on stage and there's this thing where, you know, usually, you know, to be very, very honest, usually you fly in for the concert, you're out on the next flight, and then your head is already on the next concert. But with Maestro Kuchar, it's always been just so much fun. You know, not just the relationship on stage, but also off. So, you know, there are times when, obviously, as he's just explained, we've done practically every single concerto under the sun together. You know, and he was very, very patient with me through, I think, what was my first Brahms concerto was with Maestro. And I think one of my very first Berg concertos was also with you as well. And he was very patient with me through that whole process. And I think
can I ask you a certain question? Because I often think about this. I think quite often our first performances, our first encounters with the work are the ones that may stay with us the very, very longest.
Exactly.
And quite often it happens that, oh my goodness, it's for the first time. Oh, it's going to be shaky. It's going to be nervous. Is it fair to say that we are prepared at our very best when we play something for the first time? I come across pieces now for the 20th, the 30th time. Yeah. And sometimes I believe, my God, what right did I have to do them the first 20 times? Because I don't know them at all the way I do with the repetition that only experience can give. On the other hand, is it fair to say that when you're playing something for the first time, you prepare yourself in such a way that maybe sometimes, which we shouldn't, but we do take for granted with repetition?
Well, I think whenever I do something for the first time, I try to think of myself as, say, a first-year student, say, a freshman at college or whatnot, and approach things from a very sort of elementary level and make sure that I'm super prepared, you know, that literally there could be a blackout on stage and there could be, say, like, you know, the generator goes out or there's lightning and everything needs to be shut down. Whatever happens, you still go through and you still sort of power through it. And I think, you know, for the first concert, as you say, everybody's always super prepared. And then as you do your 10th performance and then your 100th performance of the same work, you don't so much as relax, but I think you sort of learn to trust it, you know, trust in yourself that you know this and that it's in your bones and it's in your soul and you know the piece, so that you also have a little bit more freedom, I think, and you take a little more risk. So then you actually start to have a little bit more fun with it. But in my case, like when the whole South Africa tour came up, and the thing is that a place like South Africa, number one, I've never been to before. I mean, last June was my first time. And when the offer came through, it was 3 weeks. 3 weeks was still an awful long time to be away from anywhere. And South Africa is as far away from home as you can possibly get. And I remember this. First time management came to me with this, I said no. I said, I'm not going to take 3 weeks off and go to a place I've never been to, work with orchestras I've never worked with, and take 3 weeks out of the calendar year to do this. And then they came back and said, it's with Maestro Kuchar. And I said, oh, well, then hell yeah. Well, of course I'm going to do this. Yeah, well, let's book it right now, right? So, I mean, literally the conversation went like that, because I think when you think of, you know, doing new projects and going to new places and all that stuff, you know, a certain part of you, you know, still is a little hesitant. And for me, the fact that you were going to be there and you were going to conduct every single concert, for me, you know, there's, again, that trust factor, you know, thinking, oh, well, then I know the concerts are going to go well, in which case, you know, definitely I want to do the tour. So I think, you know, when you have a relationship that lasts over decades and, you know, you have a musical chemistry on stage and then off stage, which I'm very grateful for, you know, we get along very well. And we talk about everything. Much. We talk about cars. We talk about how many accidents I've been in and what a lousy driver I am. And, you know, like both of our sort of like, you know, our personal lives or, you know, the dating dilemmas that I go through because I'm a newbie at this and Maestro has a lot more experience than I do. Like, it's just fun. And, you know, and he's going to crush the microphone now.
Ted, you're turning shades of pink here. Moving on, yeah. I guess. You were talking, again, if you just joined us on Valley Edition, we are talking to Sarah Chang and Maestro Theodore Kuchar, the Fresno Philharmonic. Sarah, you were talking about the South Africa trip. And I understand you're also an artistic ambassador for the United States State Department. Tell me about that role and what does that mean to you to go abroad and have that title and that role beyond the musical ambassador role that all musicians mm-hmm. have when they travel abroad.
Well, it's a huge honor, and I'm incredibly grateful to this current administration, you know, for giving me such an honor. It essentially entails me going, you know, during my travels, if there's a free day at all, going to local schools, playing for the students. And if I can't go to the schools, then, you know, we bring them all to the concerts or dress rehearsal so they can sort of see a work in progress and the behind-the-scenes sort of atmosphere. And then we do Q&As together. We do master classes. And it really is about exposure, you know, like getting to the kids early, you know. And especially it's one thing if we're in, you know, one of the – you know, and one thing I've actually noticed during my years doing this is the fact that we are so privileged and we are so lucky to be, you know, living in a place where we enjoy all these freedoms, and that, you know, frankly, you know, my parents, you know, they were incredibly generous with their time and their resources, and, you know, they put their kids through private schools with violin lessons, piano lessons, like gymnastics, swimming, riding, like everything that you could ever want, and we sort of took it for granted. But then you go, you know, to these schools, and like in South Africa, I think you might remember I took a day and we went to the villages where, you know, to be frank, the living conditions were subhuman, you know, and you look at this and you can't help but be incredibly affected by it. And you look at these kids who have little tiny violins and they're given the instruments at school. And it stems from the fact that they want to keep the kids off the streets after school. And so they keep them in school as long as they possibly can. And the kids, because the school doesn't have funding to actually get music, they learn songs like Twinkle Twinkle and Charlie Brown and all these little songs by ear. They do it all by memory, all by ear, and they've learned everything, the scales and everything by ear, because they don't have the funds for music. So when you actually look at something like this, it's really incredible, and it stays with you. And you know, I mean, it wasn't just South Africa. I've done the same thing, you know, in like war-ridden countries like Serbia, and, you know, I did the same thing in Argentina and in South Africa. So it's something that's really stayed with me and sort of opens your eyes and really humbles you at the end of the day.
I do have to say that I was very pleased how they took advantage of our being there in South Africa, in Cape Town, in Durban, and especially in Johannesburg. Sarah had made the township visits. The dress rehearsals that we had in Cape Town, I mean, mm-hmm. I think I haven't sent you photographs, but I've got photographs where Sarah was surrounded by literally hundreds of kids who had come. I mean, it was, you know, like somebody had fallen from the heavens who was known to all of these kids. But they did a very good job of exposing what they had there mm-hmm. to our presence. And even in Johannesburg, I think the morning that you had gone to the townships, I had then gone with the orchestra to Soweto. Mm-hmm. Now, we all know the word Soweto and what that represents in the history of apartheid South Africa. And, you know, to have taken a great orchestra with a lot of Europeans and to conduct a black gospel choir from the township of Soweto, which had never sung with an orchestra before, in a brand new community center which was built in honor of Nelson Mandela, to have 2,000 people there. I have to say, it was a much greater blood rush than a lot of the Beethoven Nines or Carmina Burana's that I've done. Not because of the quality of music, but they were singing choruses from Verdi operas, from Wagner operas, and then also some South African gospel music. But the way the public reacted, the excitement of black musicians being surrounded by an orchestra, you know, you really felt that had you not gone to church the previous Sunday, you were doing much better for the Christian faith by doing something like this, because you simply see how many people you benefited through that. And they really handled it very well and, you know, planned our time there very, very well.
Very interesting indeed. Turning back to Sarah, when we were talking last week about your relationship with the Bruch Concerto, and you mentioned that you had waited years to record that and to perform that. And you were talking earlier in your conversation with Ted about approaching new works, discovering new works. Are there pieces out there? You're at this ultimate level, this super high level of your craft. Are there still pieces out there that you haven't performed, that you are still waiting on? Or maybe it's just time, you haven't had a chance to get to them yet, but you talked about the repertoire, and I was just curious your thoughts on what's next for you when you're at this high level what do you have to still aim for, to progress towards the next accomplishment you want to mark with your career?
You know, I don't think there's any composer out there that I'm not willing to perform. I think what you learn by being on stage and actually sort of using the whole performance aspect as your own training, you know, like your first concert of anything, you know, is going to grow, you know, into your 100th concert. And then with that, it's you know, you want your life experience to sort of grow with the piece. So I'm not so shy about programming things at a concert. I am extremely careful about what I record and the timings of everything. You know, part of why I waited probably a good 10 years before I recorded the Vivaldi Four Seasons. You know, and this is 10 years of constant meetings of EMI bringing up the Vivaldi Four Seasons at every single sit-down meeting for 10 years before I finally agreed to do it, is the sheer fact that every violinist under the sun and their grandmothers have probably recorded the Vivaldi. Same reason for the Bruch that I waited so long to record the Bruch. I only recorded the Bruch like 3 years ago. You know, that is kind of absurd, you know, if you think about the fact that I've been recording since I was like 9 years old. So, you know, there are certain pieces that I deliberately wait before putting it down on tape. And I think at this point, the one composer that I am consciously waiting on is probably Bach. I think Bach is probably, he's God for crying out loud. You know, I think I'm in no rush to record Bach. You know, I think the six sonatas and partitas probably are as perfect, you know, structurally and just melodically as a work as you're ever going to find anywhere. So I think, you know, if anything, if I am waiting on anything, it would probably be the Bach before I put it down on tape.
Well, we're certainly looking forward to that, and even more so looking forward to Sarah Chang's performance in Fresno Saturday night at the Sorian Theater, and then Sunday afternoon in the 60th anniversary concert. Before we go, and we just have a few minutes left because I know you have a very busy schedule, Sarah, your past performances in Fresno, people on the street, we talk about the Fresno Philharmonic, your name comes up immediately. People start talking about the great experiences they had hearing you perform here in the past. Your thoughts on coming back to Central California to perform with the orchestra and this special occasion?
Oh, I'm loving being here. I mean, I came straight from Philadelphia. We are covered in snow right now, first of all. We got like 12 inches of snow. Like the driver who came to pick me up for the airport, literally, like we were almost 30 minutes late, and I actually thought I was going to miss my flight because the trunk of his car had frozen shut overnight. So he couldn't actually open the trunk to get like my 64 suitcases in there. So, you know, so first of all, I am loving being in California. And all kidding aside, I love this orchestra. You know, I love the orchestra. I love Maestro. You know, I love making music with them. And this audience here in Fresno, you know, they are so warm and so welcoming. And you really have this whole sense of community when you come here. And, you know, it's such a pleasure, you know, for me to come back. And I'm very, very grateful to the maestro and the administration for having me back.
Well, it's a great pleasure having you here. And we really look forward to the concert this weekend. Again, Sarah Chang with the Fresno Philharmonic celebrating its 60th anniversary this weekend in this gala concert. Again, information online at fresnophil.org. And we're so pleased to be joined today by Maestro Theodore Kuchar and, of course, our guest artist, Sarah Chang. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was a great pleasure.
Thank you.
This is Valley Public Radio.